Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and hello, 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 my fabulous friends. Welcome to the all-new, totally exciting season of Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. I am your host, Chloe Dilly, and I'm back older, wiser, and more thrilled than ever to showcase the most amazing talents and inspiring stories from all around. This season is going to be an absolute blast. We're talking epic talents, heartwarming journeys, and maybe a few surprises along the way. Whether you're here to be inspired, entertained, or just have some fun, you're in the right place. So, grab your headphones, turn up the volume, and get ready to smile, laugh, and maybe even dance a little. Because this is Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. Let's make some magic together. Kia ora koutou and welcome back to Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. I'm so excited about today's guest because he is proof that you do not have to wait until you grow up to start doing extraordinary things. He is a Year 13 student at Christ College here in Christchurch. He plays football for school and will go on a short tour around Europe for that soon. He has already built two businesses. He sits on the Christchurch Youth Council. He is passionate about politics, the United Nations, philosophy and theology, and somewhere in all of that, he still finds time to read Grant Robertson's biography for fun. He is 17 years old, and he is one of those people who makes you genuinely excited about the next generation. Please welcome Lewis Devine Smith. Welcome. It is so great to have you here. I have so much I want to ask you today, and I honestly do not know where to start. Let's get into it.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
For everyone who is hearing about you for the first time today, tell us, who is Lewis Devine Smith?
Hi, I'm Lewis. I'm a Year 13 student at Christ College. I was born in Christchurch. I live with my mum, my dad, and I used to live with my sister, but now she's in Wellington. That's a very brief summary of me.
You are in Year 13 at Christ College. How has your final year of high school been so far, and how are you feeling about it all wrapping up?
My final year, you hear it a lot of the time, it's a bit bittersweet. Built like lots of friends throughout the 4 years, had lots of like great opportunities. But definitely looking forward to next year. Still a bit like unsure what I'm going to do, but no, just excited for the future as well.
What part of the UK does your family come from?
Both my mum and dad are from an area called Kent. So it's about an hour train journey from London in the countryside, and it's near a town called Maidstone, which has lots of nice little cafes. It's a nice little area.
Let's talk about what you get up to outside of school, because the list is genuinely impressive. You play football, you started your coffee business, you're a part of the Christchurch Youth Council, you go to Model UN events, and you are involved in your school leadership and camps working with disabled children and youth. How on earth do you manage your time?
I'd like to be able to say that I manage my time well, but I honestly, I don't always. My sleep schedule is not always the best. But I try just to be organised with like my calendar and just balance and have priorities on what to do. But yeah.
When you look at everything you are involved in, is there a common thread that ties it all together for you? What drives you to keep saying yes to things?
I'd say, yeah, I think it's the people who I do these activities with, whether that's football, youth council, like working with my business mentors, all these people are really like kind people and like great fun to be around. So I think that's like what drives me the most.
Let's start with football because I love this story. You started playing for Hallswell United in primary school, then took a break while in intermediate and returned in year 10. What brought you back to it?
I started way back young, just my parents kind of like encouraged me to play a sport. And then I dropped off at middle school just like to try something new. I think I played squash. And then I was thinking about doing it in year 9 at school, but where I had that like 3 year gap, I was just like not sure if it would just be like way out my level. And I wouldn't be able to compete. But then I just decided I'll just do it. I knew a few friends who were doing it signing up for it in year 10 who had done it in year 9 and really enjoyed it. So I thought, I might as well do it too. And yeah, no, it's been just great ever since. Just, yeah.
Your parents steered you toward football instead of rugby because of the injury risk. Do you think that was the right call? And are you glad they made that decision?
I'd say yes overall. In the news recently, there's been lots of stories and studies coming about the concussion damages. And so far, touch wood, I haven't had any injuries, like significant injuries from football, except maybe like the sprained ankle every other weekend. But yeah, no, it's been good.
What positions have you played so far? What prompted that shift and how has it changed your game?
So the last few years I was playing in the midfield, in the centre defensive midfield, so it's like in the midfield, but also like dropping back to defend. But now I just play centre back in my team. I think that's just like, I guess a bit tall. And yeah.
What do you love most about playing at the back? Is it the reading of the game, the organising of the team, or the one-on-one defending?
I don't know. I like passing from the back, like long passes. That's probably like my favourite play in football, I guess, for lack of a better term. Just like every now and again when I can hit a nice long pass, it's quite satisfying. So probably just that, yeah.
You have been selected to tour Europe with your football team. That is an enormous achievement. Tell us about that, when it's happening, where you're going, and how it came about.
Yeah, so the football tour is something I learned about, and I think like year 10 when I first started playing football, speaking with like my dad and the director of football at college, Mr. Courtesy, and he was saying all the way back then he think it would be like a cool opportunity for me, even like boys can get on it, for, like you don't have to be like performing at the very like top elite level to be on it, it's just like being engaged with the college football program. So we're going to, there's me and about 20 other boys. We're going to be going over to Spain, Portugal and England in the term 3 to term 4 holidays. So we're going to be playing some schools over there in England and touring some of the stadiums. And yeah, it'll be nice.
What countries and cities are you playing in on the tour? And will any of those games be in England, given that you support Arsenal and England?
Okay, so we're going Spain, Portugal and England. I'm not sure if I'll be able to remember all the cities off the top of my head, but I know we're going Lisbon, Madrid, Manchester and London. I'm probably missing some. But yeah, I support Arsenal. I've been watching Arsenal play for about 4 years now. I try and watch all the games. And I visited the stadium in England previously, but unfortunately I haven't been able to attend any of the actual games yet. But we're not visiting the Arsenal Stadium. We're visiting the Etihad, which is Manchester City, one of Arsenal rival teams. But no, that's all right. Still a great opportunity.
Tell us about your team. What colours do you play in and what is the culture and spirit of the group like?
I play just for the school, like Saturday team. We play in a white and black stripe, just like aligning with the school's natural colours, I guess. I've been playing with like lots of the boys in that team for like my whole time playing football. Some of them are my really good friends. So it's just like a nice thing to do on a Saturday and after school to just like wind down and relax and have a good time.
Are there any players in your team who think you are genuinely going somewhere in the game? And what about you? Do you see yourself playing football beyond school?
Players in my team, I don't know, lots of us just like play it like recreationally for fun, but like in the wider like school there's lots of like one of my good friends, Felix, he's a goalkeeper. He's looking at getting a scholarship to America next year to play D1 football. He's really good. He plays men's Div 1 in the weekend, and he's very dedicated, training multiple times a week, very focused on his nutrition and everything like that. So I think he's definitely going somewhere. And that'll be exciting to see. And I think lots of the other boys are in academies and stuff like that. So there's definitely a prospect there. For me personally, I'm not really interested in playing football to a higher level after school. I think the tour is going to be like a great time. But after that, I just want to like just maybe play casually on a Saturday team or anything, not invest too much time into it, really.
You're an Arsenal supporter and you also support England and New Zealand. The FIFA World Cup is on right now. How are you finding it and who are you hoping wins?
Yep, so I'm mainly an England supporter. Like, I've been supporting England since I've watched football, really. I'm hoping England wins it, but New Zealand can't win it now anyhow. They got knocked out not too long ago. But they did have some really good players, like had some good goals, but it's just unfortunate. It's kind of to be expected. But I'm actually going to be in England when the final's on, so that'll be a big highlight for me if they can win it, because I imagine the atmosphere will be amazing over there. But going off Arsenal, my team winning the Premier League trophy, that'll be like a double win if we can get it done. We've been close so many times, but yeah, we just have to hope and see.
What is your all-time favourite football memory, either as a player or as a fan?
Oh, I probably can't nail it down to one specifically, but it was probably just watching Arsenal play, not the season previously, but the one before. Like in the middle of that season, there was like game, we had like a streak just winning like games 5-0, 6-0, 5-1, and just like continuing like that. So that was just like waking up and just continuously seeing the goals going in repeatedly. It was a great feeling. It was definitely worth waking up for.
Now, let's go back to year 10, because this is where things get very interesting for you as a young entrepreneur. You built a business over 10 months as part of a school project. Tell us about that. What was the business and who did you collaborate with?
So in year 9 at school, you basically do lots of the paperwork for the business, like learn just the fundamentals, really. And then in year 10, we have the opportunity in business to like create a product. So for the first term, we do like the basics, like the researching, market research, finding like the target market. And then from term 2, it starts like amping up a bit and you like design a product. So I partnered with another boy in my class and we decided to, I think it was my idea, we do a energy drink, and then he came up with a name, Ease Energy. So the idea was a healthy caffeinated energy drink that's like less sugar and everything than all the other typical like Red Bulls or Monsters that you see on the market. So we like experimented, went to see if we get like caffeine powder. We decided not going with caffeine powder. We went like fully natural with like high sources of electrolytes through like coconut water and other like fruit sources. Once we like finalized the formula per se, I reached out to a local brewery. And then me and my dad took the drinks that we had down there, and then we got it all put into cans, made up some like design to put on the print out and wrap around the cans. And then we took them in and sold them on the market day. The market day is a really good opportunity just to get people thinking in that zone, I think. Yeah.
Your energy drinks were sold out immediately. What was that feeling like, seeing something you had built from scratch actually fly off the shelf?
I don't know. It's just satisfying, I guess. It's always nice to see something you like put so much thought and energy into, just like reap the rewards, I guess. It's good.
Did that experience change how you thought about business and what was possible for you personally?
I've never really like thought of myself as like a business person. Like, I'm not really interested in studying business or anything of the like. I just like put a lot of effort into it, it just like actually told me this is like something that like I actually could be good at, and it's actually quite fun, when I never really thought that before.
Fast forward to now, and you have launched your own coffee cup business this year. Before we get into the details, I have to ask, how did coffee become the thing? Where does that passion come from?
Whenever I went out to a cafe with my parents and my sister when I was a young child, I would always get something like a hot chocolate or an iced chocolate like that. But then my mum was like reading a news article somewhere about like the how much sugar's in a hot chocolate, and she was like really shocked. So she tried to get me off hot chocolates and onto something else. So like what both my parents drink is like they both drink quite a lot of coffee too. So they encouraged me to like go to a cafe and order a latte, I think it was. So I went there. I never really liked the flavour for like the first few months. I just kept stuck on it. And then I've, like, started enjoying the flavour a lot more. I did, like, as time went on until I really liked the flavour. And then I found I was spending too much of my money on coffee myself when I was out at cafes and stuff after school. So I was like, when I got my first paycheck about a year ago now from working in a foodstuff warehouse, I brought a DeLonghi coffee machine. And then I started getting into, like, all the coffee nerd sort of, like, measurements, the extraction time and all of that sort of jazz, and it's just progressed from there, really.
You spent your first paycheck on a coffee cart setup because you were spending too much on coffee yourself. Walk us through that moment. What exactly did you buy and what did you invest to get started?
I did my first week at Foodstuff, so we did, like, you had to do a training session, so you, like, worked for the full week. It was during my holidays, I believe. So I did, like, I got my wages for the 6 hours every day, which was quite nice to receive a sum like that the following Wednesday. And I was just, like, looking at my bank account, like, prior to that, I saw, like, $6 coffee here, $7 coffee here, $6 coffee here. And I was like, I should really do something about this, otherwise I'm just going to lose all this money I'm getting coming in from my work. So I was like, you know what, I'll buy a coffee machine. So I did a bit of research online. It was quite a impulse decision. And then, like, after about maybe, like, 20 minutes to, like, 30 minutes, I found one on a Noel Leeming's website. It's a DeLonghi. So it's an Italian machine. It was, like, the following day I watched some reviews and everything on it to check it was a good decision before just impulse buying it. But no, I still have that machine at home. I use it in my kitchen. It's got, like, the temper and everything inbuilt into it, and it's a really good quality machine that you can have lots of control over. I think you can do a lot with those home machines and have, like, really good coffee without investing too much into a real fancy machine.
What was that process like, buying equipment from overseas? And were there any challenges getting it set up exactly how you wanted?
Yeah, buying equipment from overseas, like milk jugs, all coffee equipment that comes with it, lots of it is sourced from, like, China. Then, like, some of the high-quality stuff you get from Italy, if you're, like, investing a bit more into it. So there's definitely lots of wait times with the current, like, situations going on at the moment. Lots of delays, fuel surcharges, everything that comes along with that. But, no, it's all worth it if you can get it from somewhere like Italy or one of those countries, yeah.
Tell us about your coffee. Where do you source your beans from and what does your menu look like and what is the most ordered product?
I'm partnered with Underground Coffee Roasters. So they're like a Underground, and you might also have heard of All Press. So they're like two brands in one company. I think that's how it's described. I went around and tried lots of coffee beans and I've obviously had experience of drinking a lot of them from just going to cafes around Christchurch, and I, like, narrowed it down to three brands, and Underground was one of them, and I reached out, and Underground from, like, the bat was just really helpful, really keen to help support me in any way that they could. So I just decided I'd partner with them and source my coffee beans from Underground. So I use a bean called Beatnik. It's the organic bean that they use, and I also use the decaf bean as well. My menu looks, it's quite specialised and focused on the drinks at the moment. While I'm starting out, I've decided I'm just going to focus on the drinks and try and get those right before expanding to any, like, speciality, coffees or, foods that you might see at other, more developed coffee carts. But we just do the basics, like your flat whites, your Americanos, lattes, that just your basic coffees like those. And then we also have got a range of teas. We source those from a New Zealand company. So they are like your green teas, jasmine teas, Earl Grey, all of those. And then we've also, there's been quite a high demand, you've probably seen on social media and everything, and just around town for matcha. So I got my sister to come in and teach me how to make matcha. She drinks that a lot and I'm not really experienced with that drink, but no, it was a learning experience and that was good. So we serve matcha and also just some cookies as well, just on the side.
Your logo and branding were designed completely for free by a friend's mum. That is a wonderful community moment. What does the brand look and feel like?
Yep, so Alicia is my friend Jasper's mum. I've known Jasper since primary school, so I went to Ladbrokes Primary School with him. I was friends with him since probably around year three. And his mum's always just been a really nice person. And then when she heard I was doing a coffee cart for a school business project, she mentioned to Jasper that she'd be willing to kindly design a logo and help me with the branding and the stuff that comes along with that. And then Jasper relayed that on to me and I got in contact with her and I've just been really grateful. She's been like amazing. I mean, you can see the brand for yourself. I think she's done a great job on it. And yeah, because like before that, I had like this really wacky design that I just done on Canva that looked like really ugly, and it's just like light and day between the two of them. So I'm really lucky and thankful to have her do that for me.
You have already traded at the Ferrymead Night Market and the Recordon Market. How do you find working in such big open spaces and so many different demands for various food and beverages? What makes your products stand out?
I'm doing the Ferrymead Night Market on both Fridays and Saturdays from 5:30 to 9. And then the Sunday Night Market is at Riccarton that I do as well, and that's from 5 to 9. And I find I enjoy where it's like it's all very spread out. There's lots of space between all the vendors. But I'm serving a lot of hot chocolate just due to the fact that it's a night market, the hot chocolates and the chais and stuff. There's a few people who do order like a flat white. I've had a few Americanos of late. But it is mainly those hot chocolate drinks, which is nice because not many people, I think, when a coffee cart, like, here's an invite to go and trade at like a night market, they just think straight away, no, I'm not going to do that. No one will buy my coffee. But lots of the time, especially in winter, it's been very cold out there. So I've put a little hot chocolate sign up and I often see people going past, oh, hot chocolate, I want that, it's freezing. And they come over and get a hot chocolate or a chai or something like that. So it's been good, keeping people warm.
You have talked about wanting a community-focused push, getting to as many markets and community events as possible. What kinds of events are your favourite to be a part of?
I really like the market so far. Been with like meeting all the other new vendors, been really friendly to me, give me helpful advice, and also just like it's really nice just to talk to customers, see how the day's been going, try and make them happy, makes me happy too. But I'd love to like push out to some more events, some maybe like some private functions, also like the council events, like maybe like the agricultural days, all the big days like that where there's lots of people come together for a sense of community, yeah.
You love talking to people and you have described the business as something that kind of just flowed naturally rather than being planned out in detail. Is that approach, going with the flow, something that works for you, or do you think you will need to get more structured as the business grows?
Yeah, that's definitely like, that's just like me as a person. I'm very like flowy, I guess. I don't like organize everything. I'm not like writing everything down in a notebook or anything. But recently my business mentor Jazz at the Kind Foundation has helped me with like the bits that actually do need a structure. Like when I'm applying for funding, say, I actually do need to have like a proper thought out and written down business structure in cases like that when I'm presenting to other people. But the business has just come on naturally as a flow for me and it's worked well so far. Yeah.
In 5 years, what would you hope the coffee business looks like? You mentioned possibly employing people. What is the dream version of this?
Well, firstly, I'd love for it still to be operating. I think that'd be great. I'd be really sad if I did have to shut it down just with the amount of work I've put into it. But no, I would love to like employ someone because obviously I can't be there all the time. Like at the moment, I've got school, so I'm very limited and also extracurricular activities. So I am very limited to the hours I can do, hence why I'm doing just the night markets at the moment. So if I could employ someone else who's like got maybe more flexibility, that'd just be a great asset, I think, just to be more have more of a presence around the community. So yeah, that'd be nice to see in 5 years.
You have always been interested in politics from a young age. Where do you think that interest came from? Was there a particular moment or person that switched that on for you?
I can't nail it down to a specific time that I've my interest in politics suddenly gained. But I remember elections, my parents both have always listened to the RNZ radio, just out loud in the mornings. So I always remember when I was a little toddler asking my mum questions about John Key. And other current politicians at the time, even though I probably didn't really understand any of it. And then as years got on, as elections come up, when I was younger, I always wanted to stay up at night and watch the election results come in, even though I don't even think I was rooting for a specific party at that point. And then over the years, I've really tried to stay up to date with current affairs when I can. I watch the news every night. And read the news on my phone. I think that's kind of got me a bit interested into politics, just becoming more informed about it. And then I've, of more recent, I've joined CYC, which has been great just to get more of that local politics that I've never really had much experience or knowledge about before. So going in and doing a deputation was definitely a highlight for me, and having my voice heard. That was definitely a big highlight, and it was a great initiative that I didn't know was possible before this. So I'd encourage anyone else to do that too. And then I've also recently joined mainstream party politics. So I've just recently become a member of Young Labour. So that's been really exciting because I'd say for a few years now I've been definitely leaning left, more progressive. So it's just been great to actually join where I'm voting this year and try and encourage others to vote too.
How did you get involved in Model UN? What was your first Model UN experience like, and what do you actually do in these events?
So my first event was a Aotearoa Youth Declaration review or something along those lines. It was just advertised through my school notices, sounded interesting. I was interested in politics at that time. So I felt it kind of linked to that. So I was just I might as well just go along and sign up. So I went to that, met the people there. All the volunteers were really lovely and informative, teaching us how to write position papers, and all the other delegates or students there who I was brainstorming and working with. Really nice. I was talking to one student. I was year 12 at the time, and they were year 13. They'd been to a few of the Model EU events. So they're talking to me about that, and I was I seen some videos online about it, and I kind of put two and two together. I was I really want to sign up to that when it comes about. But I think then I signed up to the email subscription list and whatever. And then I got an email about a Model UN. I think it was Canmon, last year's Canmon. So I can't remember what country it was. I can never remember. They've all just been kind of jumbled into one. But I went to that, and it was a great experience. Got to go meet lots of passionate, like-minded rangatahi there, and just discuss United Nations and Model United Nations. And ever since then, I've done Model United Nations, the Model International Court of Justice, Model EU. Oh, there's more that I'm forgetting. That's bad. I've blanked on the spot, but I've been to quite a few now. And in about tomorrow morning, actually, I'm leaving for NZ1 up in Wellington again, which was really great because in that there's lots of social aspects tied into it. So I'm heading up with a few friends, and there's the gala night and everything like that. So that's always a great time.
You have also done NZ Model Parliament, and you attended the Aotearoa Youth Declaration at Avonside Girls. Can you explain to listeners what those events actually involve and why they matter to young people?
Yep. So first, starting with NZ Model Parliament, it's also an event run by UN Youth, even though it's not a department or a sector of the UN, but that's all right. It's still a great way to just get youth involved in civics and understanding our government and our government processes. So it's just getting youth to, so you get assigned a political party. I was assigned ACT Party last year. So that was great. It was like, it's really important. Like, I personally don't align with the ACT Party policies, but it's really important to just like understand to working across like the tables and like working cross party. I think is really an important thing, and something that's like essential for everyone to just like moving forward. So it's like a great skill you can learn from that.
You're heading to NZMUN this year. What country are you representing and how do you prepare for something like that?
So I'm representing Zambia. So it's a small African nation. Well, it's not really small, but a developing African nation. Some of the key issues are like inequality. They've got quite a low GDP per capita. It's 1,000 and something. So it's just like I've been small like developing African nations before. It's just like working with other nations who are in a similar boat to you and trying to just like strive for the best of your country with your country's interests. But how do I prepare for it? I usually try and prepare like at least a week or so out, read through all the documents, the resolution papers, and then just do some research. There's lots of great, the UN themselves have lots of great resources on the website to go through and understand and just like, just general knowledge about the country. I think it's the best you can do and just reading the information provided to you.
You are the Secretary of the Christchurch Youth Council. How did you end up in that specific role and what do you think you bring to that role that makes it work?
Well, it was a bit of a shock really because I joined the Youth Council on about October of last year, around that time. And then I went through as a general member. I really enjoyed the Youth Council. I think it's a great opportunity, really good fun. Great socially, meeting lots of like-minded people, but also actually getting out there in the community. Working on projects and also like advocating for rangatahi here in Christchurch on like a government level, like doing submissions, and also on a local council level, like I spoke before about like doing depositions on behalf of the youth in Christchurch. But I got the secretary role. I applied for the secretary role at the beginning of this year, I think it was. And I just spoke about in like my little spiel about how I'm usually like quite a reserved person. Like in a room, I always like try and listen to what everyone else is saying before I like form an opinion. And I think that's like one of the most important things about being a secretary is listening to people, listening and making sure that everyone's voice is heard. Not just the people who speak the most, but maybe like sometimes I think it's really important to just make sure everyone's voice is heard. And that's what I thought I could bring. And yeah, it's a lot of like, I'm someone who like has dyslexia. So it takes me a lot longer to do like typing. Like my typing's not the best, but I think it's definitely helped and improved my typing skills and speed. But yeah, you know, it's been great so far.
You represent people from the Hallsville community through CYC. What are the issues or conversations in your community that you feel most strongly about and that you most want to make sure are heard?
Well, I think firstly, making sure that people from Hawswell are actually represented. Historically, people from these communities, they're a bit like rural in the urban city, like Hawswell, Hornby, places like this, making sure the voices are actually heard. And also lots of the main issues are public transport into the city, like kids having to wait too long in the morning to get their buses. There's only one bus going in, so if they miss their bus, they can't get into school. Issues like that, really, yeah.
You have done school leadership and you have signed up again this year for the CAMP program where you support and look after young people with disabilities, giving them a safe space. What does that experience mean to you?
School every year runs an event called the, they run an event in collaboration with the Sony Camp Foundation. So the Sony Camp Foundation is a group that organise, or a charity that organise overnight camps for children who face challenges and disabilities. So they come, the parents drop them off at school and they get paired up with three companions to one child. They're usually between the ages of like 5 to 9, that sort of age range. So they're most of the time filled with lots of energy running around. But it's like a really great experience. Just like also knowing that like the parents, you're giving the parents a break. So it's like this is some of the first time the parents have had like been able to just like let go and have like a break for themselves. So it's just like a really nice knowing that and developing that relation, that relationship and having fun with all those kids. It's great.
You look up to a teacher at school, Mr. Corpsey, who works in school development and also plays football. What has he taught you about the kind of person and leader you want to be?
He's a great teacher. You always like see him around school. He's really happy. He'll come past you with a big smile on his face and say hello. And you can like always know he's somebody you can like go talk to. So it's just being that like out and open, open person. It's great and something I aspire to be like.
You are a reader. You recently finished Grant Robertson's biography and you are currently reading Things Fall Apart for an English Internal. You are also into philosophy, theology and biographies. What is it about reading that you love and which book has genuinely changed the way you think?
I love a lot about reading. Like lots of the books I read are non-fiction. So like the aspect I get to learn from the books I read a lot of the time. It's also just like a great pastime that you don't feel like guilty for. So like instead of like scrolling on your phone, just like I really enjoy just like picking up a book. I get like the same aspect of entertainment, but then I don't feel guilty for doing nothing. A book that has genuinely changed the way I think. I recently read a book called The Eyes of Gaza. It's about a Palestinian journalist who has been living in Gaza during the recent genocide. I think the way that she like has written the book is like really beautiful. Like it's like a diary, and it's changed the way I think because it's just making sure that I'm always staying like grounded and like thankful for what I have.
You love listening to philosophy podcasts. What is your favorite at the moment?
I enjoy listening to a range of podcasts from like philosophy to politics. At the moment, there's a guy who runs a philosophy channel. He's a British podcaster called Alex O'Connor. He discusses things like consciousness and other philosophical subjects, and I found him really engaging. And I'm really hoping to go to one of his shows. He's touring at the moment, so that'd be great.
You also used to play piano, though you do admit that you only really practice during the lessons themselves. Tell us about your musical journey.
Yeah, so my sister was, I first got into music, or the music area was when I went to one of my sister's violin lessons. So my sister's played a range of instruments like ukulele, violin, guitar and so forth. So I went to one of her violin lessons. I was probably around like the age of 4. And then in the instructor's house, there was like a piano and I was like hitting the keys on it. And then the violin instructor was like asking if I'd be interested in learning how to play the piano. And I like looked at my mum and I was like, yeah. And I asked my mum if I could like when I went home. If I'd be able to do piano lessons. So from that point on, I did them with that same instructor for a few years and then took them up and did them internally at school. And then at middle school, I reached out to a place in Wigram and I continued them there. But throughout that whole time, like I never really, as you said, I was only playing or practicing the piano inside of that lesson. So like that 30-minute lesson, and that clearly wasn't enough practice to get very good at the instrument. So I can probably whack out a few songs, but I wouldn't confidently say I play piano now.
Okay, Lewis, before we let you go, it's time for our classic fun questions. What is the closest thing to magic in your opinion?
Oh, whilst I don't believe in magic as itself, it's probably like a really cringe answer, but just like great memories you can have and just like replaying things in your mind.
What is the grossest thing that you can think of?
Oh, the grossest thing I can think of. I'm a vegetarian, so probably the thought of someone eating raw meat is like really like irks me. I hate it.
Would you rather have the ability to speak every language in the world or have the ability to read every person's mind?
Speak every language in the world. I think that's a bit of a no-brainer for me. Just getting to develop relationships with people from different cultures. I think it'd be really cool to learn about the cultures too, and just it'd be make traveling a lot easier. And I think there's some thoughts you'd probably be at peace not knowing too.
SpongeBob or The Simpsons?
Oh, never really watched either of them. I'd probably say The Simpsons, no reason.
If you could go back in time and have a conversation with your 10-year-old self, what would you tell him?
I think this is probably quite common advice, but just keep taking like all opportunities that come at you, even if at the time you don't think they're worth it, they might develop into something that you never thought they would. So yeah, just take all the opportunities you can.
Lewis, I genuinely could have talked to you for another 2 hours. You are someone who, at your age, is already doing things that most people can only talk about doing someday. A football tour of Europe, a coffee cart business, running at markets, CYC, you and youth, working with young people with disabilities, reading biographies, and being a Year 13 student on top of all of that. What I'm impressed by is that you've not mapped out some perfect 5-year plan and pinned it to your wall. You are going with the flow, saying yes to things, listening to people around you, and trusting that the path will become clearer as you walk it. And I think that it is actually one of the most mature approaches to a life that a young person can take. Ka kite ano, until next time. That's the show, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show and want to hear more, head over to plains.org.nz for past episodes. You can also subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to get the new episodes delivered right to you. Do you have a talent you'd like to share? I'd love to talk to you. Just email info@plains.org.nz to get in touch. Keep working on your talents. You are amazing. Until next time, bye!